This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
ESPN golf analyst Curtis Strange live at Augusta after a weekend of breaking it down. So, Curtis, it was a weekend that began with all the talk about Tiger Woods and ended with all the talk about Phil Mickelson and one of the really feel-good stories with him and his wife embracing off that 18th green that we've seen in golf or any sport in a really long time.
Well, you're right. Hey, first of all, guys, I just want to say, Golic, you keep thinking you're okay in the singing part, okay? That's just nice.
Very nice.
You keep thinking that. That's good. I agree with you. I like everyone else, I think I'm kind of overdone. I'm well done on the Tiger Woods issue. I think it's time we watch him play golf. If you can do that and not think of what he's done to the game and what he's done to himself and his family. But with that said, I mean, the other flip side of the coin, what story would have been a wonderful story to overshadow all of this other stuff? And it would have been Phil Mickelson, quite honestly. You know, possibly a Tom Watson or Freddie Couples, but that's not going to happen. So Phil and Amy and, we know what they're going through. My wife's a breast cancer survivor, so we know what they've been going through. It's a tough situation. And, you know, she looked great, but let me tell you something. He played just fantastic. He played the way he plays. He missed shots, he recovered, he made putts, he missed putts, but that's Phil. That's why we like to watch him play golf.
The shot on 13 out of the straw, putting it to about 6 foot, and he ends up birdieing that one instead of getting that eagle, but he does get the birdie. A great shot there, and then as he carried that lead later on, getting to the last hole, walking to the 18th green, were you screaming with everybody else to please don't pull the driver out on this hole?
Well, it's not the play anyway. It doesn't make any sense. He can make par. He can make birdie with three wood. He's certainly long enough. So that's the smart play. And Phil has, as we've seen in the last couple of years, has played more percentage golf at times. But he's an overpowering player. He overpowers golf courses, and that's the way he plays. If he backs up Mike too much, then he comes back into everybody else's type of game. So he has to hit driver a lot of times to keep his advantage. But I got to tell you, the shot at 13 for all the viewers, there's a lot of things that went through my mind. One thing is that we don't know about the lie; it must have been good. The second thing, the stance is very unstable in pine straw, as we all know. We've all slipped in pine straw. You know, there's no way to miss it on that green. If you miss to the right or short, you're in Rays Creek. I know that very well, okay? And if you miss to the left of the green, play really safe, it's impossible to get it up and down, so he had to take that aim. Not only was it a gutsy shot to hit it out of the pine straw, but over the creek, on the green, it was gutsy, I'll tell you that.
Mike and Curtis Strange, take us inside the mind of a golfer. Take away, the weekend hacks like myself. When I watched Mickelson with that stretch where he went 5 under par in three holes on Saturday with the terrific shot for the eagle on 13, then the eagle on 14 where he knocked it in from the fairway, and then just missed another eagle on 15, at that moment I thought to myself, take us through what the mentality of a player is there, because looking back on it, there's a part of me that wants to say he sort of won the Masters right there. What give us an idea of what you think that kind of a little stretch there might do for a player, a caliber of yourself or Phil Mickelson?
Well, Mike, it's that little part of you that says he won the Masters right there is exactly right. Now, he certainly had to play the remaining holes of that day and Sunday, but that thrust him in the lead or right at the lead then. He was lagging behind. He was lagging in just momentum. He kind of, his shoulders were a little down, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 he's right at the lead. And now he has a giddy up in his step, as we like to say. His attitude has changed in 30 minutes like that. But when eagle on 13 was, okay, it's good. He hit two good shots and made the putt. But when the shot went in at 14, he has to settle himself down now because, things are going his way. He just made a shot. He's thrusting right at the lead of the tournament. his mind says, okay, we got 15 to come up. Let's hit a good tee shot. Let's don't overswing, which is the tendency when you get so excited. Oh, don't overswing. Put it in the fairway. I got plenty of length. Put it on the green. Let's make birdie. Well, he didn't do that. He drove it a little left. He laid up. But as we all know, when things are going well, they continue to go well for a while. And he damn near made eagle there and made a tap-in birdie. So, you know, now he's just got to finish the round, which he did without any mistakes. And all of a sudden, boom. You know, it's basically between he and Westwood yesterday from start to finish. I never thought anybody else had any chance at all. KJ Choi played around with it for a while. But, you know, Phil just played. Phil deserved the win. I mean, honest to goodness, there's a lot of times somebody wins, you say, hey, he kind of backed in. You know, maybe like last year, Angel Cabrera. You know, Kenny Perry really should have won. Should have. But, you know, Phil should have won. He played best. He played fantastic. He hit the shots when he really needed it, like 13 and 15. Let's don't forget about the second shot at 15. He just played. He was very, very good yesterday.
And then there's a, then you mentioned Lee West, Westwood, who was close but no cigar in the last three majors, third, third, and now second. Does something change for him mentally down the stretch in that last nine, when especially if Phil starts making shots? And why is he doesn't seem to be as sharp at the end as he needs to be to get the win?
One word: pressure. Pressure on the backside of any major championship is you can't put it into words. Everything is so magnified tenfold, and I think even more so at Augusta, because there's the fine line between good and bad is so thin, and especially with the greens. You know, Lee Westwood doesn't have to do one thing. He's not doing anything wrong. He did mess up. You know, he should have actually. He had a real good chance to win Tom Watson, Stuart Sink's British Open last year, and actually did mess up a little bit in the stretch. He played better than anybody else. At Torrey Pines, when Tiger won on a broken leg, basically he played exceptionally well to the last four or five holes there. He doesn't need to do anything else. It's, you know, he's learning in the process. Now he's 36 years old, so time might be running out eventually. Lee Westwood is such a good guy. If you saw his interview on Thursday afternoon, he's hard not to root for. He's a humble man with a big heart, and I just really like him a lot. And he's playing terrific golf. He's just right now just went up against Phil Mickelson. I tell you what, to beat Phil yesterday would have been tough to do for anybody.
Shot of 67 did Mickelson on the final day. Mike and Mike and Curtis Strange, and then that finally brings us back to Tiger Woods. The week began with everything that had happened for the previous 144 days. It ends by looking back at the 4 days. As far as his game was concerned, Curtis, he was really struggling with it, particularly Saturday and yesterday. How much of that do you think was rust, and how much of that is just some days it isn't your day?
Well, it's hard for any of us to really know what's going on, because he hasn't given us really anything, okay? And, you know, I saw him when we interviewed him Thursday afternoon. It's the first time I'd seen him in a couple of years. So it was awkward. I'll be honest. I think he played Thursday, Friday, he played pretty well. He played pretty well, but I think he's got to be exhausted. Now, I have no reason to say these things, by him. He's got to be exhausted. The last 4 months have been exhausting, physically and emotionally, probably more emotionally. He gets to Augusta. It's his first time back. I don't care if he says he's normal on the first tee Thursday or not. There's no way humanly possible he can be normal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. He's got to be on edge. He's got to be nervous. He's got to be anxious. He's got to be wondering about what everybody in the world is thinking about him. And so he played horribly yesterday, and he didn't play very well at all on Saturday. How much does that do now, again, speculating, how much does that do to exhaustion? How much does that do to just, I've had enough? And then you saw the frustration when he missed a real short putt at 15. You know, people were right about that. That's when an athlete realizes he's lost, he loses concentration, and really doesn't give a rat's ass anymore. But, you know, exhaustion. And I say exhaustion because I've never seen him hit shots like that. And I think he'll do better in the future, but this was a long, long, hard week for him.
Curtis, it has been terrific for us having you every day through this Masters here on the program with your insight.
Does that make sense to you guys? Because you've been following us.
It made perfect sense. It is a game of emotion and psychology more than anything else. And I agree with you. Certainly there may have been an element of him that was spent before it began.
Yeah.
You know, Mike, you get that physically in football and golf. I think you get it psychologically.
You get it mentally, and as the weekend wore on, it just fell down him more and more, and then one bad shot follows another.
Thank you, Curtis, so much for the time and the perspective. We genuinely appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Enjoyed it.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Bill Mickelson, another major. And joining us now, Mike Tirico, Subway Fresh Take Hotline, part of our Masters coverage. You also hosted it in 3D.
Yeah, on TV. I think it was available, I don't know, I think they sold a couple of thousand 3D sets when they first came out here about a month or so ago. And this was the first sporting event all 4 days for a few hours delivered on 3D on Comcast, Time Warner, a couple other cable systems. So it was like the first color TV broadcast. Like 17 people may have seen it, but we actually got to do it.
So you have to wear those glasses while you broadcast it, though?
Yes, you do. And no, you don't go on camera. That's that's been invariably the next question for people. But yes, you do. You do have to wear them to watch. And I will tell you that sports in 3D, 5, 8, maybe 10 years away, but it is phenomenal. For golf, it's unbelievable. And for the Masters, I don't think any event goes better from SD to HD to 3D than the Masters at Augusta. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I want to check it out. Here's what I want to throw at you.
Yes.
Phil Mickelson, obviously super talented.
Yeah.
And doesn't win a major, so we're forced to ask the question, why? And then when he starts to win majors, some want to throw out the idea that he's changed his game a bit. I see a guy who's still just as aggressive, proved that yesterday, and capable of winning a Masters with his style. So my question to you is, do you feel like he's become a different golfer over the years, or a guy that finally started winning tournaments that maybe people expected him to win earlier on in his year?
Not different. Slightly adjusted and fine-tuned. Tightened up a weakness in his swing, which was his inability to hit pressure drives. Now, and you said it, and I agree 100%, he is not the best driver of the golf ball. He's a little bit better than he was. Now, I think you really do have to put an asterisk on all this, because for the last 10 months, the amount of time he spent working on his game has not been what it would have been because of all the attention he has spent and time with his wife Amy and his mom because of their battles with breast cancer. But he did identify it as a problem. He addressed it with Butch Harmon, his swing coach, and it's worked pretty well. But you know that he's won 4 majors and 3 of them have come at the Masters. And I thought the most telling stat or the telling comment of the week to me was Friday as we were going off the air. Yeah, going off the air. Tom Rinaldi interviewed Mickelson outside, behind 18 Green, and we were sitting in Butler Cabin ready to wrap up the show. And Phil said, you know, when I come here, I feel like I can swing as hard as I want to because if I miss, there's always a gap in the trees and it's the pine straw. It's not the deep rough and you're in a forest of trees that you can't get it out. And he feels that plus his knowledge of the greens, his ability to get up and down, makes him more comfortable swinging hard at the ball here than he does in other places. And I think that showed yesterday with that second shot that he hit at 13. That'll be remembered as one of the big shots of all time under pressure. That's the shot that won him the Masters. I know 14 he holds out from the fairway, stuff like that. But that's the one with the pressure on the line and Sunday that won it for him. So it proves that he feels different there than other places.
Mike Tirico joining us here, Scott Van Pelt Show. I'm Ryan Russillo. What did you think of the decision on 13? 206 out, off of the pine needles. He's got a hazard in front of him. He has the lead at 13. Choi's had a rough stretch. Tiger's probably not going to catch him. I can't believe he even took the shot.
I do, because if he dumps it in there, okay, he's in there in 2, drop 4, he can still make 5, and he has a chance to make a birdie at 15. So I feel like he's still in the game there, and if he does what he pulls off, then he pretty much shuts everybody out, and that's what he did. So I understand where he was going and why he did it. A hair surprised, but that is right in Mickelson's profile. That is what Phil has always been about, and it's what endears him to a lot of fans, in addition to always signing autographs and having, you know, the family that's cut right out of Central Casting.
Tiger finishes 4th. I watched the entire final coverage of everything yesterday. I actually watched pregame. That's how into yesterday I was for the Masters.
Right.
Yeah, I could. I'm actually texting Van Pelt going, I'm watching an hour of pregame for this thing. That's how excited I was. Tiger's drives were bad. His putting was off. His short game was off. Even some of his approach shots were bad. Out of sand was a terrible shot for him. and yet he still is able to put up a score. Have we ever seen a golfer play as poorly and score as well in our lifetime?
Maybe not with that attention at that stage, given all that was going on. Guys do that on a day-to-day basis. He does it more often than not over the last few years. We see every one of his shots we get a little out of balance with. You know, Tiger does more than any other guy, but it's pretty darn close. He has the ability to turn a 4 into a 3 and a 5 into a 4 better than most do. And I thought as the weekend went on, I think maybe Thursday, Friday was the attention, the focus, the adrenaline, and because of all that went into the entire week, seeing players for the first time, seeing all the people who were the ancillaries to the golf tour, all that stuff, I think that just kind of wore down as the week went on. And the rust of, okay, I got to put a Band-Aid on this so I don't do that as you play, that just wasn't on command or on demand as it might have been if he'd been playing for the last 7 or 8 weeks. So I think you saw some of those effects as we went through. But for the most part, you know, I thought he finished between 10 and 20. To finish between four or, you know, top five and to finish fourth, to me, is an amazing golf accomplishment. And say the other stuff whatever you want.
Give him a grade on the entire weekend, play, off the course, the whole thing.
B, you know, if the play would be above expectations, but not what he normally does. I thought his dealings with the media were, you know, kind of B-ish. He was really good with us in Butler Cabin, good with CBS in Butler Cabin, was good in that, you know, hit all the answers he needed to hit, and whatever he decided he was going to say in the Monday press conference. I thought as the week went on with the media, it was not as warm and fuzzy, but that happens during the week with players. I thought with fan interaction at the golf course, it was the best I've ever seen him, whether it was in the round or signing autographs after he hit balls late Saturday. That's not something he's done very often, to sign that many autographs. So I'd say the overall is B. And now, you know, let's see what the next month brings, and let's see when he comes back. You would guess Wachovia and Charlotte players, Memorial would be the three likely spots to see him between now and the U.S. Open. Maybe two of the three, maybe all three. I think the more he plays and the more he deals with life out of the Augusta bubble, then the sooner he'll get more stuff behind him.
Mike, great job this weekend, and all you guys just did a great job with the coverage, and we'll talk to you next week.
Fun week, special place. Talk to you during playoff start Saturday.
Can't wait, man. Wednesday will be the last day of regular season hoops.
Yeah, you got it.
Let's bring in our insider, Adam Schefter, who joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Schefty, the Jets acquiring Santonio Holmes from the Steelers for a fifth-round draft pick. Now, as far as talent on the field, there isn't any question about Holmes. He is developing into a number one receiver in the NFL, but we all know about some of the problems off the field, including the one that he is facing currently. How do you analyze this trade from the standpoint of why it took place?
Well, good morning, Mike and Mike. And first and foremost, when you think about Santonio Holmes going to the New York Jets, isn't it interesting that the New York Jets last year get Braylon Edwards right after he's involved in an incident in Cleveland in which he did not get charged with any crime, but still could wind up being disciplined this year for a little bit, and now they go out and get Santonio Holmes basically on sale, with Santonio Holmes facing a four-game suspension this year for off-the-field transgressions. And clearly Pittsburgh did not want to deal with Santonio Holmes. They're shaking up some things. They're getting rid of some guys. They did not feel comfortable with Santonio Holmes' situation. The Steelers have been through a lot this offseason, and they decide to make the decision to dump Santonio Holmes for a fifth-round pick, which also changes the draft in many ways. The Jets no longer need to go wide receiver in round one. You'd think the Pittsburgh Steelers absolutely need to get a wide receiver in the first couple of rounds of the draft, and it's a very intriguing trade with the Jets taking another gamble, but this is one with a very low investment. A fifth-round pick is not much for a player who's on the verge of becoming a standout.
So is this clearly a message from the Pittsburgh Steelers about, you know, what's going to happen to guys that have behavioral problems?
Well, I think that this is a situation where they bring in Holmes, and they have a big belief that under Rex Ryan, every player is going to be well-behaved and walk the straight and narrow and be in line with what's going on in New York. And even if Holmes has had some issues, and clearly he had the incident with the woman this offseason where he got into some type of fight with her, he's had other issues here. I mean, there's stuff here. There's no question. But the Jets believe that coming in, they can work with him, they can mold him, they can help control him, and in return they get a great receiver.
Mike and Mike Shefty is with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Wasn't Rex Ryan's dad just like that, Mike? You played for Buddy Ryan. Didn't he believe he could bring in a bunch of guys, you know, and they would play for him because of his, the force of his personality?
Most coaches believe that a guy will play different for them, whether it's off the field, they'll be better here. You know, look at the people that, New England have taken, that they'll be better here. And if someone isn't playing well on the field, a lot of coaches believe, you know, we can be the difference for that guy. Shefty, I met, you talked about the Jets side. I'm asking more about the Pittsburgh side of this thing. Is this a message from Pittsburgh, from the Roonies, that, listen, we're not going to tolerate any of the off-field things? If you get a list going on here, you're not going to be here.
Well, you know what else it is, Mike? It's the Roonies saying that, but it's the Roonies saying we don't want to pay for that either. Keep in mind, Santonio Holmes is in the last year of his contract, and just like the Jets traded for Braylon Edwards, when he was in the last year of his contract, Holmes is now entering the last year of his deal. And when you get a guy in that situation who has performed and is going to want to get paid and has the legal question marks, that's why you buck. It's a little bit like the Denver Broncos and Brandon Marshall. They've been a little bit hesitant to give him a long-term deal with some of the issues that he's had. And so rather than that, they're open to the deal. And it's not unlike what Pittsburgh is going through with Holmes, what Cleveland did last year with Edwards. They don't want to pay Braylon Edwards long term. The Jets were willing to at least do something with Braylon. The Steelers did not want to have to pay Holmes. They didn't want to have to deal with Holmes. So they ship him out to New York right now for the fifth round pick.
Mike and Adam Schefter, quickly, what do we expect this to mean now for the Steelers in the event that Ben Roethlisberger is not charged? That is the expectation. Mm-hmm. They will have a news conference. The DA will have a news conference in Georgia today, and the expectation is he will announce that he will not be bringing charges against Ben Roethlisberger. If that is indeed the case, what do you expect, Adam Schefter, the Steelers to do, and what do you expect the league to do with Ben Roethlisberger?
Well, it's a great question, and I think that it's going to be a very similar situation, if it goes the way we're talking, to Braylon Edwards in New York. I think that the Jets are likely to discipline Braylon Edwards before this season starts from the incident stemming from last year in which he was not charged. And if, in fact, Ben Roethlisberger is not charged today, as we all expect, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers still could impose some type of discipline in the form of a fine or a suspension. That would be their choice, whatever they felt would be most fitting. And the Steelers would take action against Ben, not the league. I think that's the way it'll happen if and when Ben Roethlisberger is not charged.
It's Adam Schefter with the very latest on a, you know, a trade that has a lot of repercussions for a variety of reasons amongst two good teams in the AFC. Schefty, thank you.
Thank you.
So he says there that a lot of it is the money, and I do believe that. I buy that.
I agree, yes.
Here's the only problem with that. I would get it if you got a first-round pick or a second-round pick for him. But this, to me, is more a sign of get him out of here, because if you weren't going to pay him after this coming year, he was under contract. You could have just let him play this year and then let him go. It's not, and you say you get nothing for him. Well, they got a fifth-round pick for him.
Right.
There's no way that fifth-round pick is going to give you the production this year that Santonio Holmes would have, even in the last year of his contract. So if they'd gotten a first or a second-round pick, I would have said, okay, you know, they got something while the getting was good. But they got a fifth-round pick.
Well,
so there was at least a part of this that was, we got to get him out of here.
I agree with you in the thought of just having him for the last year. But if that year, last year came with a four-game suspension, you know, and anything else that might have come along with it, they might not have thought it was worth it. You know, that seems to be looming out there, the four-game suspension. So I think that had a lot to do with it as well. I think there were a lot of factors together in this one.
Larry Hardesty, longtime beat reporter for the New York Jets, who covers the Jets for 1050 ESPN Radio in New York, 1050, breaking the news a couple hours ago. Larry, how did this deal come together?
Well, Jason, the Jets have been trying to get another receiver. They have Braylon Edwards, but there's been a lot of talk from people around the league that you really can't depend on him to come up with big catches. And obviously, the Jets are really trying to go for it. You know, we speak to Bart Scott, and he indicated that the players don't really expect to play football in 2011, so this is going to be a big year for them. You know they needed a third receiver. You've been hearing Brandon Marshall's name mentioned. Well, they've been doing some talking with Pittsburgh, and they finally came to an agreement, so Santonio Holmes is going to be that big third receiver for the Jets.
Wait a minute, so Bart Scott thinks, wait, no football in 2011 at all?
Yeah, it was real interesting. He said to us a couple of weeks ago, Jason, that he expects that the owners are going to lock the players out, and the players are prepared. They've been ready for the past 2 years. They are prepared that they don't expect there's going to be football in 2011, and that football is going to change as they know it, and that he's prepared and others are prepared to bite the bullet just like the football players did in the 80s. So it was a very interesting comment from Bart Scott. This was a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the Jets had to realize that, you know, everybody was gunning for them, and nobody knew that there was going to be football in 2011. So apparently the front office agrees with him, and they're making some moves.
I just can't believe that, Larry, they're not going to find a way to get a deal done. I know it's posturing back and forth, a lot of strong words, but the NFL isn't stupid. You know, it's not baseball or other sports or hockey that winds up, well, we'll kill ourselves and kill the goose that laid the golden egg. I have to think things are going to get done at some point.
Well, I would agree with you too, Jason. I believe that as well. And I just think that, you know, there's so much time that you can, you know, posture, as you said, go back and forth and try to feel each other out. But there's no question that, clearly they don't want, look, the players don't want it and the owners can't afford it. I mean, if you look at situations like the folks in Tampa who are looking and Jacksonville who don't have sellouts and had their, you know, their games blacked out and maybe more of the same coming up this season, they really need to get this done. But, you know, both sides are so far apart at this point, the players just really aren't optimistic.
Larry, let's get back to Santonio Holmes here for a second. If the Jets did load up for this year, this is a guy who's been a Super Bowl MVP. Yes, he's in some trouble facing a lawsuit in Florida for a woman who claims he threw a glass at her, cutting her above the eye. Fifth-round draft pick for Santonio Holmes, it doesn't seem to add up. Why such the low price?
Well, it looks like that maybe Pittsburgh is trying to, and I have to check into what his salary is and bonuses and stuff if they owe him anything, but it looks like Pittsburgh's trying to clean house a little bit, Jason, and maybe clean up their image a little bit. You know, they were very concerned about what's been going on with Ben Roethlisberger. Now, as you mentioned, the situation with Santonio Holmes, and maybe there's some other things that we'll find out more as this deal gets closer to, you know, we find out the intricacies about the deal. But you're right, when I first heard it, I was like, huh? But, you know, I made a couple of other calls, and this substantiated, so I'm not sure what the reason is, and maybe all this will come out in the near future. But you know what, Jason, right now, if you're a Jet fan, and I know you are, you gotta be pretty happy right now.
I'm ready to buy my Super Bowl tickets. Are you kidding? We need another wide receiver. We got a wide receiver. It's Christmas Day in April.
Yeah, and now you figure out what's going on, of course, and Jason Taylor is the other free agent that they're trying to get now, and he's not going to make a decision, according to his agent, till the middle of next week. And, you know, and this is interesting, I guess, if I was sitting in your seat, I would like to ask you about, when you, as a Jet fan, how you feel about Jason Taylor, but you'll talk to your audience about that. But they really like him. They really want to put him in specific pass-rushing situations, Jason. They feel that he can still be effective. Calvin Pace had 8 sacks to lead the team last year. He had 7. And I guess in the grand scheme of things, if you could put him along with that, those, you know, exotic blitz packages that Rex Ryan likes to do, he's already solidified himself at the other corner, you know, getting Antonio Cromartie, who's got 1 year left. He's playing for a contract and Poole at the other safety. The Jets definitely knew they had to improve, and they're really trying to improve this team.
Now, Larry, as far as Jason Taylor goes, I'll get over that as soon as he puts the uniform on. Jason Taylor is with us. How much concern is there with the personal conduct policy in Roger Goodell's Santonio Holmes? Maybe he's facing a possible 4-game suspension for his behavior in the offseason.
Yeah, that's something that the Jets are going to speak to the league about. Maybe they have spoken to the league. I'm not real clear about that yet, Jason, but, you know, my source is not sure on where that goes. There's no question that they will probably, if he has to serve sometime, they'll take the hit. They'll know going in what the situation's going to be, and then they'll move on forward. They'll move forward from there. But it's a gamble on their part. They've taken a couple of gambles last year and this year, and Mike Tannenbaum's that kind of guy. He really wants to get this team going in the right direction. I mean, he got so close last year, last season, Jason, he could smell it. You know, he was a half away from getting to the Super Bowl, and they realized that they had to retool and get some other players. So I think they're really to take the risk. I mean, it's early in the season. If it has to go, they were able to survive Calvin Pace missing 4 games last season because of his situation. So they will be prepared if they have to go without him for 4 games, but they know they'll have him for the other 12, and they're willing to take that chance if that's the way it has to go.
He covers the Jets for ESPN Radio 1050 in New York. 1050 breaking the story on late Sunday night. Santonio Holmes traded from the Steelers to the Jets in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Larry, as always, appreciate your time because I always have fun when we talk. It's always good news about the Jets, so I thank you for that.
My pleasure, Jason. We'll talk again soon. Thanks.
For people like ESPN.com baseball insider Rob Nyer. No, it wasn't just Tiger Woods making his big 2010 debut this weekend. How about the Nationals' Steven Strasburg pitching in his first minor league game for the Nationals' double-A team? He goes 5 innings, 8 strikeouts, does give up 4 runs, but his fastball at around 97, 98 miles per hour for the entire time. Yep, Steven Strasburg is the real deal. Rob, seeing what you saw on Sunday for Strasburg, when do you think we're going to see him in the majors?
Well, you can only leave him down there for so long. If you wait too long, it just starts to look silly. My guide with basically all things Strasburg so far has been Mark Pryor, who was, he wasn't as hyped as Strasburg and didn't deserve to be, but close. And he was drafted one summer, didn't pitch that summer, signed late, and the next season they sent him down to start the season, and he was in the majors, debuted on May 22nd, and was excellent the rest of the way with the big club. And I think that's essentially what we'll see with Strasburg. I think he'll come up at some point in May, whether it's middle, late, early, I have no idea, but sometime in May, and then I think he'll be effective as long as he pitches.
As long as he pitches for Washington, which will be until he hits free agency.
Well, I meant as long as he pitches this season, but yeah, your point.
Oh.
I don't see, the thing is, I don't think he's going to pitch all season. I think they'll shut him down probably late August, early September, so he doesn't rack up 180, 200 innings.
You think we'll see him on a pitch count, too, when he comes up?
Oh, sure. I mean, everybody's on a pitch count these days. Yeah, he's not going to throw 120 pitches in a game. He might not throw 110. But that's true of every young pitcher, not just him.
Rob, let me get you to the majors now here. Coming off the Sunday night baseball game, we just saw a thriller between the Brewers and the St. Louis Cardinals. It comes in around 3 hours and 10 minutes. Of course, the firestorm coming off of Sunday night baseball last week, the Yankees and the Red Sox, their two games of that first two games of that series, 3:48 and 3:46. Umpire Joe West said it's embarrassment to Major League Baseball the way the Yankees and Red Sox take so long to play. The Yankees and Red Sox really took umbrage to that last week, and they're still talking about it to this day. You know, well, what do you think of when you see the Yankees and Red Sox play games that go 4 hours and everybody else can get it done in like 3 or 3:15?
Well, they do take too long. There's no question. I mean, it's worth putting Joe West's comments into context, though. He may well have been mad at the Yankees and the Red Sox. Umpires hate long games. They just do. It's human nature. But what he was upset about was that the plate umpire, I can't remember who it was, the plate umpire would not grant timeout to some batters in that game, and the batters responded in a less than friendly fashion. And I think that's what West was really reacting to, was the players' disgust with the umpires trying to keep the game going. I don't blame the umpire trying to keep the game. I don't blame Joe West for defending his plate umpire. Joe West, I suspect, was the crew chief. That's his job. Long term, though, I don't think, if there is a problem, I don't believe that Joe West making comments like that really helps any, because any solutions really have to come with the help of the players on some level. And making comments like that probably isn't real helpful in the long run.
How do you think it does get solved that game times do come down a bit then?
Well, you just have to continue to do what you're doing. I mean, it's really, baseball can do some things. Baseball, the umpires can refuse to grant timeouts. They can tell the batter to stay in the box. And there are remedies here, but when they get a lot of pushback from the players, it's hard to keep it going. They've really got to have a lot of support from Major League Baseball, and that doesn't always happen, in part because MLB doesn't want to annoy the union too much. So, I mean, even if there's not a technical contractual reason why the players have to go along with this stuff, the reality is that they do have to go along with a lot of it for it to work, and there really isn't that buy-in yet.
ESPN.com baseball insider Rob Nyer is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests like Rob appear with us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Now, Rob, I know it's only a week, but the vultures are circling. They're circling in New York. I know Jose Reyes came back this weekend, but on Sunday, the Mets lost the rubber game of their series to the Nationals. Yoan Santana gave up a grand slam in the top of the first inning. And as a Met fan, I'm trying to think, okay, who's going to be the first person to go? Is it going to be Jerry Manuel? Is it going to be Omar Minaya, or is it going to be a flurry of trades when the Mets disappoint again this season?
I think that it's rare that a GM is fired mid-season, but it could definitely happen if the Mets continue to play poorly. It's hard to say if they will. I mean, as you said, it's early. They're 2-4. You know, it's funny, if they're 3-3, probably nobody really says anything, but the losing record really catches your eye. I think they'll have some slack, those guys you mentioned. I think Reyes comes back. That's one thing. Beltran comes back next month, I think. That helps. I don't think we'll see any big moves until probably July. I could see at the All-Star break somebody getting fired, but probably not before then.
All right, with being 1 week down so far in Major League Baseball, Rob, one of the big storylines that stands out to you is what? We'll play a little fill-in-the-blank here.
Well, I think you could certainly look at what's happening in the American League West, where everybody's favorites, the Mariners and the Angels, are 2-5. You know, I don't like to take a lot from early in the season, but I do believe, regardless of the standings, I do believe that those two teams were both overrated coming into the season for various reasons. So it's not shocking to me that they're 2-5. Are they going to play better? Sure. They'll probably turn things around and have winning records before long. But I wasn't that impressed with them coming into the season, and I'm not now.
He's ESPN.com baseball insider Rob Nyer. His latest on the front of the baseball page on ESPN.com. Rob, thanks for your time and all that, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Take care, buddy.
We are live from 710 ESPN in Los Angeles. Supposed to be a nice 65, 70-degree day today. Let's span the globe.
We do it every day at this time. We call it our daily sports page.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.
Spanning the globe.
The Masters.
Well, Mick wins his third Masters. Tiger comes in fourth place. Jason Sobel, ESPN.com's had a busy weekend. All right, Jason, where do you rank Phil Mickelson among the all-time great golfers with three Masters wins now?
Well, he's right up there near the top, Colin. Only four other players have three, and of course Jack has six. Tiger and Arnie each have four, and then he's up there with Faldo, Sarazen, a couple other players. Phil Mickelson is right there in the discussion of all-time great golfers. If you want to go through the entire history of golf, I'd put him in the top 15, top 20 at least.
Tiger was vague about when he's going to come back. When do golf insiders believe we'll see Tiger play again?
I've got to think that now that he's back and now that he's made his return, he's getting comfortable with his golf game, comfortable with his swing, and I believe he's going to play a somewhat full schedule. And remember, full for Tiger is not necessarily full for anybody else, but I would think he's going to play 12 to 14 events and probably come back in 3 weeks at the Quail Hollow Championship in Charlotte, North Carolina.
The galleries, or as they call them, the patrons, were overwhelmingly supportive of Tiger. Do you think that continues? What's the talk about that?
Yeah, the joke going around was that nobody heckled Tiger until he heckled himself after a couple of bad shots. They were very respectful. I think that does continue. At some point, there are going to be fans out on a course who have been outside for 8 hours in the sun drinking adult beverages and decide to give Tiger a hard time. It's just inevitable. It's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to be something that becomes common on the PGA Tour. I think it's going to be few and far between.
Mick wins his third Masters. Good for him. Jason Sobel, ESPN.com. Thanks, Jace.
Thanks, Kyle.
Los Angeles.
We get ready for the postseason. Finally, Lakers have been inconsistent for the last couple of weeks. Fall to Portland. John Ireland, 710 ESPN. Kobe's 21 for 70 in the past three games. What do you make of that?
I think the finger's bothering him, Colin, even if he won't admit it. And I'll tell you another thing. You know, I think the Lakers are a little guilty of hubris here. They think they can flip a switch. And Kobe and Derek Fisher, and especially Phil Jackson, are smart enough to know that's not the way it works. I talked to Nate McMillan yesterday, the Blazers coach, and he's the third coach that's come in here over the past 2 weeks playing this. Nobody wants to play the Lakers. The Lakers are dangerous. No one can beat them in a seven-game series. Colin, take a guess what the Lakers are in their last seven games.
2-5.
You're right. 2-5. Why are people scared of the Lakers?
Well, it's interesting. I think you can beat the Lakers in a game. I would argue it's tough to beat them four times in 2 weeks. There are three teams tied for the 6, 7, and 8 spots. Who presents the most trouble for L.A. in that opening round?
San Antonio, no question about it. The Spurs are a veteran team with three superstar players, and Ginobili's playing out of his mind. They're not scared of the Lakers, and that's the team that, as somebody who covers the team and who has spent the whole year watching them, I think would give them the biggest challenge. Portland is not far behind that. Portland has always been good, but now Brandon Roy's got an injury. He tweaked a knee last night, and so Portland may be an easy out if that knee doesn't get better. Oklahoma City's a good team, Colin, but the only reason I would put them as the easiest team to play is that they've just had zero playoff experience. They've never been there before, and you wonder if they can perform on that stage. But I'll tell you this, all three of those teams are playing better right now than the Lakers are.
Good stuff. Good talking to you, John.
Have a good day, Colin. See ya.
That was Spanning the Globe.
The constant variety of sports.
The Herd on ESPN Radio.